Okay, we start by going to Deuteronomy 30, if we can do that quick. So this is the prayer from Moses of blessing and cursing, and it gets referred to by Paul in Romans 10. Mike, this is small. Okay, now I understand those that struggle when they're at the front. So Deuteronomy 30, 11, 14. So final warning for this commandment, which I commend thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that thou shouldst stay. Who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldst say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. Deuteronomy 30 is really worth rereading on its own, but we're tight on time. Heavy words in Deuteronomy 30, as you're well aware. So let's go to Romans 10. Okay, so maybe a quick couple of notes here before I dig in. Okay, this might come as a surprise for some it might not be. It's been a real adventure in the last year or so for me. I'm pretty heavy deep in using AI for work and for many other outputs that I create on my own. And so this has been received, like this has had some help with my workflow on using AI in different forms. This is not me. I just want to preempt, like, did you just go take 30 seconds and create it by ChatGPT? No, this is like hours of work, me going back at it, go this angle, take that angle. Okay, this part, there's a really neat connection. Why are we missing it? This is not me like being lazy 5 minutes, okay? This is like hours of work over days. And I truly believe this with all my heart, like the nature of knowledge working is tremendously changing. Like the ripples of it, we're barely feeling it. And so I just want to say that right from the outset. Anyway, more on this. I'm quite the geek on that stuff. If you're curious, if you want to talk to me about this, fun stuff, powerful stuff. And if I just add to this idea of technology today, I would argue that if you think AI is dangerous, that your TV is way more dangerous. This will get political at times, but very rarely. Like, for example, like I've done a lot of hours, I've spent a lot of hours on over the last year. And so sometimes you can catch AI being political, like it will refuse to go certain ways, certain angles, anything like on the left side, especially, like it's not interested. But this has been a real pleasure to me to notice how it's, at least now, maybe it will change in the future, right? But it's totally willing to give you all the passages that it thinks connects, makes sense. And what I'm trying to say is I haven't perceived anything, and I use many models. Like, I'm not just using one, I'm using many of them. So for what it's worth, but like, I just want you to consider, because there's always people that, like, for example, when I was a kid, calculators were already, like, I grew up in the 80s, but supposedly just before me in the 70s, the whole thing was like, calculators are all going to make the kids dumb. Well, sure, maybe in part, but like it hasn't really done what some have said it would, I think. And Leanne, my wife, which is quite connected into the writing spheres, has said like there's many like totally over the top views, right, on if you use AI, like, and whatever, like, and I think we're at the cusp in history. Like, this is just starting and major changes. So anyway, for what it's worth, I just wanted to be upfront, disclose, like, because like it's kind of expected today, but I don't want people to buy this disclosure or say, oh, you're just a cheat, because this is kind of the trend. Like, you're using AI, oh, therefore that means you just cheated. I refuse that categorically. I spent too many hours on this. So this is just my little intro on this topic. Okay, fascinating stuff though. All right. Let's go to Romans 10. So Moses, at the end of his life, the exile is coming when he gives those blessings and curses, and the law cannot produce the heart it demands. So he even prophesies that they will totally disregard the Lord, essentially. And so this is a pretty scary thought. We'll see why as we go on. And yet the word will be brought so near, they'll live in your mouth. So Paul lifts that exact language in Romans 10. That nearness has arrived, and it's the gospel. And so Moses was already pointing past himself. The whole Bible, as an arrow, points to Christ. Okay, note to self, make your slides bigger next time. My goodness. And you won't hear me. Okay, so Romans 10, 2-4, they have a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge, going about to establish their own righteousness. Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believes. So the angle I took in Romans 10, because you can't talk of a passage this thick and this deep in 30 minutes and give the full amount of like every angle you could take. This was impossible. So I just took the natural angle that I thought was the richest, to my opinion. So I'm not claiming I'm exhausting the passage, but the thought that really stuck with me was the idea that like we have to understand the unbelievable situation that the Hebrews, the Jews, are in. They have the word, and yet they're fully disconnected to Christ. Let me repeat that. This is rather striking, rather strong. How can you have the word, make it the whole core of your religion, which the whole Bible, as we know as Christians, as new believers, as we know, fully points to Christ, and yet they're fully estranged from Christ? This is a powerful dichotomy, like the disconnect. And so the angle I wanted to take was the idea of self-perception of the Jews. What's happening that they so can't see Christ, although they're so in the word, like even for rabbis and so on? So you'll see the theme kind of repeats itself, the idea of being so close and yet being so far, and what makes them not be able to see it, right? That was my concern. That was the focus of what I wanted to share. So if you go to James, we won't go, let's just read it from here. James 1, 23, 24. It's the passage about the man that looks at himself in the mirror. He beholds himself and goes his way and straightway forgets what manner of man he was. And then this one was particularly dear to me, this one, the picture of the ark. So in 1 Samuel 4, you'll recognize the story where they carry the ark to save them from the Philistines. But God totally refuses to bless the Israelites because they claim that God will follow in the ark. And so it's the passage where it says the ark carried into battle like a lucky charm. Possession of the sacred became, in their mind, the guarantee of safety. The sign swallowed the reality. So it's, if you remember the passage, they bring the ark as if having the ark will save them, and we know what happens. They're not saved. The ark is actually going to Philistia. And so this is, to me, what's happening in that passage of Romans 10. It's that idea that the Jews, they put themselves towards the Bible in a way that's not owning it personally, but rather just as a possession. So we'll expand on that. So it's not about status claiming. It's not about magical possession thinking. It's not about we have the thing, therefore we are safe. And the fear is that even for Christians, we might, some of us, I hope that none of us live in this way, but like, it's totally thinkable that we might think we're saved and that we commit the same thing, right? I'm not pointing at anyone, like I'm talking to myself here, right? I'm including myself. The idea is you might believe yourself as being truly saved, and yet like you might be fully far from God still. Like, this is a scary position to be in, to believe you're saved if you're not. So let's just keep going. Okay, so John 8:39, Abraham is our father. If you were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. Abraham is clearly the father of faith. And in John 9:28, I really appreciated when Tom was speaking this Sunday, because it literally spoke to Romans 10, literally. And I was like taking heavy mental notes as he was talking. Because if we go to John 9:28, when the Jews are talking to the blind man, thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. And how many verses further? 15, John 9:40, 41. That's Jesus. If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, we see. Therefore, your sin remains. Interesting connection to Augustine. I have become a question to myself, that idea to really genuinely ask questions about your own person. The Pharisees never did. Their we see was the end of the question. We have the Bible, the Torah, and therefore that's like we're happy with that. We're satisfied with that. So blindness was the curable condition. We see. The fact of saying we see was the lock. That's what stopped them from being able. And that's what I meant earlier with the ark being carried into battle like a lucky charm. Moses was just a lucky charm. It was no better than people having rabbit tails or really, like, pick the lucky charm you have in mind, basically. Rabbit foot? Okay. All right. Okay. The ground is flat, though, at the cross. So Romans 10:12, for there is no difference between the Jew and the Greek. For the same Lord over all is rich unto all that call upon him. And I use the word amulet, like the idea of like a magic talisman, right? Like something that would have power, basically, but yet is empty. So the amulet doesn't work. The ancestors, they won't protect you. The category doesn't exist. So the man with nothing, going back to the passage about John 9, where the blind man is healed, that Tom spoke on this Sunday, the man with nothing received, the man with everything, plural, the men with everything, they used everything to stay away. And being someone was the whole problem. Like they were proud in having the Pentateuch. And obviously the question becomes, I put your, but it should be our, because I'm in it. What's our Moses? What's the thing in your hand, in my hand, that I'm presenting to God instead of opening my hand to receive him? So Romans 10:9, if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shalt believe in thine heart that God has raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. So mouth open, going back to Deuteronomy 30, where the word is near your mouth. Amulet down, that idea of lucky charm, that idea of you just have to own by being a Jew that you're saved, like as a group, which is quite strong in my understanding for the Jews, especially back then, and it's to have empty hands. So this is not about a better religious performance. It's about the end of performance entirely. And the key word is faith, as we'll see in the verses coming. And so another quick note, this was my first time studying, like, to present Romans. Okay, so thank you for the opportunity, by the way. Like, it really grows you. And the first thing that you notice, that I noticed as I'm digging in Romans is, it must have been the style back then, okay? That's my understanding. But, like, he switches topic quite radically at so many junctures, and you're kind of startled, like I'm sure the presenters before me have hinted at that, like the switches are really strong, and the more I looked into Romans, the more I saw that essentially, okay, in education, like we call spiraling, the idea like you start and then you just keep going, you present it, you introduce it, and then in like 3 weeks you come back and then you keep growing it. I'm not sure the picture is perfect, but what surprised me the more I read into Romans is how much the whole book, the theme just keeps coming back, and it's kind of spiraling. So if you look at Romans 2, right, he's kind of like Paul knew what he was doing, you can tell, right? Like he's hinting at what he'll talk. Right? Like this is what he does here. Behold, thou art called a Jew and rests in the law and make thy boast of God and knows his will and approves the things that are more excellent, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that thou thyself art a guide to the blind. But we just saw the passage about the blind man, right? A light of them which are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, which has the form of knowledge and of the truth in the law. This is something he keeps coming back, the form of and not the right knowledge. Let's just keep going. There's so much in the whole passage. The places that I haven't highlighted, I told myself to skip, so I'll skip. Okay, so Romans 4. For if Abraham were justified by works, he has therefore wherefore to glory, but not before God. For what says the scripture? Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. 4:16, therefore it is of faith. And this is the word that I find really becomes almost the chorus of Romans 10. Someone can correct me, feel free. This is what I'm noticing. It always lands on faith. And you see it at so many junctures. So therefore it is of faith that it might be by grace to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed, not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. And the passage just before Romans 10, 9, 30, 32, what shall we say then? That the Gentiles which followed not after righteousness have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of faith, but Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, has not attained to the law of righteousness. Wherefore? Because they sought it not by faith, but as it were, by the works of the law. The amulet, the lucky charm, this notion. Not by faith. If I can just add, on the topic of faith, I don't think I'm dreaming this. Every spot where Paul mentions faith, there's something about empty-handedness. There's something about having faith means you come to God with nothing. You present yourself as you are to God. You don't bring your Torah. You don't bring your ancestors. There is really this, I could almost, I'm not going to, but you could almost replace faith with that idea of coming empty-handed to God. Anyway, that would be worth a full other chat. Romans 10 in the chapter, what says it? The word is nigh thee, this is Deuteronomy 30, even in thy mouth and in thy heart, that is the word of faith which we preach, which I'm not talking about this whole outreach emphasis that he puts, Paul, in Romans 10. This is like, there's too much to talk about. Romans 11, right after Romans 10, well, because of, what's the word? Unbelief, not faith, they were broken off. And thou stands by faith. Be not high-minded, but fear. And I put it in capitals because I think we need to reflect more on that. We need to fear before God. Romans 12, for I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according to God has dealt to every man the measure of faith. So we're finally closing the loop. As I said, this idea of self-perception, how someone sees himself, perceives himself in terms of his religious belief, essentially. And so Paul himself, and we see here the idea of faith being empty-handedness, like it's you come as you are, as truly who you are. Let me try to go quick. Okay, perfect. So Romans 10, 20 to 21, I was found of them that sought me not. All day long I have stretched forth my hands unto a disobedient and gainsaying people. Right, so they use Moses to refuse the nearness Moses promised. The man with nothing received him. That's the blind man from John 9. The man who could see used their sight to stay blind. So Christ is not a talisman, a lucky charm that we carry around. He is a person who carries you. He carries us. It's the other way. I can't read what's underneath. Christ's arms are open, are still open all day long. And it really made me reflect of like Christ on the cross, right? I'm sure this picture has been said, right? He didn't die with his arms like this. He died with his arms open. And you see Paul using this language of stretched out hands to his people. I find that's an interesting connection. So finally, let's wrap up. These are my two last slides, if I'm not mistaken. So Psalm 17, 15. So to me, what Paul really touches on, this is my take on this, but it's this idea again of self-perception. How can someone be so close to the word and yet be so far? And so I think these verses will tie it up here. So as for me, this is Psalm 17, 15. As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. Like clearly communion here, presence. This is not what the Jews talking to the blind men by any stretch of the imagination. This is Christ talking to them, right? So we know this can't be those folks. And yet it made me think really deeply about this idea of being known, right? So Revelations 22, 4, and they shall see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads. And 1 Corinthians 13, 12, for now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. So this idea that all your beliefs about yourself that separate you from God, this is presence with God when those are gone. Like when you're wrong, I should say our, because I'm with you. When our wrong beliefs about ourselves that create friction, issues, sin, when our perception aligns with what God sees in us, and this is by falling on our knees, this is humility, there's no other path. This is where you line up with how God sees us, with how God sees you. So Psalm 139, I'm not going to lie, this is why I read it on Sunday during the breaking of bread, because I was like, this whole psalm is talking about exactly this notion that Paul, I think, in Romans 10 is hinting real hard at. So this is just the end. So search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. So the Jews, Christ talking to in John 9, the Jews are clearly not praying that. I don't mean the Jews in general, I mean the Jews like in John 9.